Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 20.
Yellow Wind Ridge, Tang Monk in Difficulty, Pigsy Strives Ahead in the Middle of the Mountain. Quite a title.
It is. And for you, the learner listening in, this isn't just, you know, some dusty old story.
Not at all.
Think of it more like a really rich source of insight, you know, into human nature.
Yeah.
Sticking with things.
Perseverance, yeah. Mm-hmm. And those curveballs life throws at you on any big journey.
Exactly. Whether it's a literal trip or, well, something more metaphorical. So we're going to unpack some key moments.
See what they reveal. Right. We've got the text right here.
Yeah.
And it's honestly amazing how much is packed into just this one chapter.
So much wisdom, yeah. And stuff that still feels really relevant.
Absolutely.
Starting with the opening verse, that little poem at the beginning.
Good place to start. It really sets a philosophical tone.
It does. The core idea seems to be that the law, or, you know, fundamental truth, maybe.
Yeah, principle truth, something like that.
It originates in, well, ceases within your own mind.
Mm-hmm. And then it asks the big question, who decides?
And the answer is, it's up to you. It's on the individual to figure it out. Your own discernment.
That's such a key point, this idea of internal authority, right?
Yeah.
Not just following external rules, but really understanding from your own perspective. And the verse uses some pretty intense metaphors to show how hard that is.
Oh, yeah. Twisting blood from iron? I mean, wow, that sounds difficult.
Intense effort, definitely. Almost impossible effort.
And then there's that image controlling a calf with a rope through its nose.
Right.
And trying to tie that rope to a knot in thin air.
In empty space, yeah. And tethered to a tree that isn't even real, a non-being tree.
It's such a wild picture. What's that really getting at?
Well, if you think about any big goal, like self-improvement, that calf could be like our restless mind.
Yeah.
Always jumping around.
Ah, okay. The part we need to control.
Exactly. And those impossible tasks, tying knots in emptiness, they just highlight how incredibly tough it is to really get a handle on our inner world.
Makes sense. Then it gives that warning. Weehaw, don't mistake a thief for your child.
That's a stark one.
Yeah, it sounds like, don't be fooled by things that look good or familiar but are actually bad for you. Like maybe illusions, temptations.
Precisely. For you, the learner, think about those thieves on your own path.
Mm-hmm.
Misleading ideas, maybe shortcuts.
The ones that seem appealing but lead you off track.
Exactly. And the next line drives it home. Strike through them decisively.
So no half measures. You need clear, strong action to cut through the illusions. Well, mind-bending.
Mm-hmm.
When the mind appears, it's also no mind. When the principle appears, it also ceases. What?
Huh. Yeah, it's a bit paradoxical, isn't it?
Just a bit. What's the practical takeaway there for our journeys?
Well, I think it suggests that at a deeper level of understanding, the sharp distinctions we usually make, they might just dissolve.
Okay.
Think about it like, sometimes the best solutions come when we stop thinking in rigid either boxes.
Right, looking beyond the categories.
Exactly. And the verse ends with this image of clarity. Seal Tor. A clear blue sky, like a bright autumn moon.
Luminous, where distinctions blur. Interesting.
And remember, this whole perspective comes after Ahsang's big insight from the Heart Sutra.
Oh, right. You mentioned that. So this isn't just abstract philosophy.
No, it's foundational. It's meant to be the understanding that guides their whole quest. It sets this deep context for all the challenges ahead.
Okay. So from that deep spiritual framing, the story then shifts quite a bit, doesn't it?
It does. Moves to a much more down-to-earth scene. Summer arrives.
Yeah. Summer's blazing heat. And we get this lovely, almost quiet moment.
Little poetic interlude.
Describing the seasons changing, fading flowers, cicadas buzzing, silkworms.
Pomegranates, new lotus leaves. It paints a really peaceful picture, almost idyllic.
Before the next bit of trouble starts.
Exactly. A moment of calm before the storm, you could say. A reminder that even tough journeys have these moments of beauty.
Little pauses. But yeah, that peace, it doesn't last long.
Nope. Soon enough, Tang Monk sees the sun going down, moon coming up.
And says, time to find lodging. Sensible enough.
But of course, who immediately pipes up?
Has to be Pigsy.
Always Pigsy. His stomach starts rumbling.
Priorities. And that immediately clashes with Monkey teasing him.
Oh, Monkey jumps right on him. Calls him a homesick ghost. Just because the guy's hungry. Savage.
But Pigsy's comeback is pretty good, actually.
It is. He points out the difference between his, you know, very real need for food.
Tangible needs.
And Monkey, who apparently just exists on drinking wind and smoking mist.
Huh. The practical versus the ethereal Monkey.
It's a classic dynamic between them. Pigsy's very human worries about food and shelter make the whole thing feel more relatable, don't they?
Definitely. Even with all the magic and monsters, you still have these basic needs.
But then Tang Monk steps in, the stern leader.
Right. He accuses Pigsy of being too attached to home, still thinking about his old life, even threatens to send him back.
Ouch. And Pigsy gets pretty desperate then.
He does. His plea is actually quite revealing. He insists he is committed, that he understands you have to embrace hardship to grow spiritually.
Shows his inner conflict, doesn't it? Complaining one minute, but deep down, he knows why he's there.
Exactly. It's a key moment for Pigsy's character. Despite the grumbling, he gets the purpose of the quest. And this whole exchange leads them to their next encounter.
The old man.
The old man in the cottage, yeah. They find him reciting Buddhist prayers.
And the first chat is all very proper.
He gets off his horse, and the first thing he says is, "Benefactor, I inquire." It's like super traditional, very respectful.
Yeah, showing deference to the elder.
And he straight up says why he's there. Traveling from the Tang Dynasty, heading to the Thunder Monastery, needs to get these Buddhist scriptures all on orders from the emperor. It's all very official sounding.
It is. And that formal address, it sets a certain expectation, right, of how things should proceed, the kind of respect involved. But then almost immediately, there's this disconnect.
Ah, yes. The advice.
Exactly. The old man's first bit of advice is completely the opposite of the monk's goal. He tells him, oh, scriptures, you need to go east.
Right. And you can almost feel the monk's confusion. He thinks like, wait, the Bodhisattva told me to go west. Why is this old guy saying east? There aren't any scriptures in the east.
It immediately throws a wrench in the works. Is the old man messing with him? Or is it just a genuine misunderstanding? It creates this little bit of, you know, intrigue right from the start.
It does. It sets up this really awkward moment. The text says the monk is, like, he's hesitant, embarrassed almost, doesn't know how to respond to this curveball.
Yeah, he's stuck.
But while the monk is grappling with politeness and confusion, his number one disciple, Sun Wukong, well, let's just say his approach is a bit more direct.
That's putting it mildly. Wukong just loses patience, basically.
Pretty much.
He steps up and just lays into the old man. Ooh, old man, you're ancient, but you know nothing. It's really blunt, kind of aggressive, especially compared to the monk.
That's so different.
He's basically saying, look, we just need a place to crash. Stop with the nonsense. He even threatens to just sleep outside if the house is too small. Like, he doesn't care about the old man's hospitality at all.
And the old man's reaction to Wukong is incredible. He doesn't even react to the rudeness at first, right? He's just totally fixated on how Wukong looks.
Yeah, the appearance just hits him.
He grabs the Tang monk and is like, look at this kind of text. This crooked-faced, pointy-chinned, thunder god-beaked, red-eyed consumptive demon.
Wow, what a description.
Isn't it so vivid and honestly pretty scary? What does that tell you, I mean, about how powerful that first visual impression is?
Oh, it's huge. It's a really key moment, I think. It just shows how deep-seated our reliance on first impressions can be. The old guy is so, like, overwhelmed by Wukong's bizarre appearance that any politeness just goes out the window.
He vanishes.
It taps into that real basic fear of the unknown, the monstrous. But Wukong, he just laughs it off, you know, typical Wukong.
Of course.
He basically says, huh. This old timer can't spot talent. Handsome guys are useless anyway. Sure, I'm small, he says, but I'm tough, like a bundle of muscle. He's actually proud of his strength, despite looking terrifying.
Right. And then Wukong decides to, I don't know, maybe impress the old man, maybe just show off. He launches into these completely over-the-top boasts.
Oh, yeah, the list.
He can subdue tigers and dragons, kick the heavens and stir the wells, you know, the usual modest stuff.
Heh. Standard Monkey King abilities.
But then he also says he can, like, fix loose bricks or stop a pot lid rattling. It's such a weird mix.
And it is. And the old man's reaction is kind of perfect. He just chuckles and calls Wukong a, basically, a smooth-talking beggar monk.
Like he's seen his type before.
Exactly. It's like, okay, I've met monks who exaggerate to get by. Just maybe none that looked quite like you. It sort of grounds it a bit, despite the wild claims.
It does. It adds that touch of reality. But then the old man actually looks at Zubaji.
And things go from bad to worse, or maybe more terrified.
Oh, yeah. The old man's still kind of processing Wukong, right? Then he properly sees Zubaji standing there. And the text says, Balinch, the moment he sees Baji's face.
Here it comes.
He was so terrified, he stumbled backwards, ran into the house yelling, close the door, close the door, monsters are here.
See, even worse than the reaction to Wukong.
Much worse.
What is it about Baji, do you think?
Well, Wukong was a demon, but Baji's look, those really obvious pig features, maybe that just hits a different, more primal fear button for the old man. It seems to cross a line.
Could be. And Baji, he just chimes in, ever the practical one.
Ah, yeah. What does he say?
He says, "Oh, sir, if you judge people by looks, you're totally wrong. We might be ugly, but hey, we're useful."
That's brilliant. There's actually real wisdom there, isn't there? That whole idea that looks can be deceiving. They don't show your real worth or what you can do.
It's such a great line. Hits that theme perfectly. And the chaos isn't over yet. The old man's run inside, but then his family gets back from the fields.
Oh, right. The reinforcements arrive.
They come back, see the horse, the luggage. They're just curious at first. But then Zubaji turns his head, waggles his ears a bit, stretches out that snout.
Oh, dear.
And the reaction. They were so scared, they just fell over each other, tripping, stumbling everywhere. It's almost slapstick.
It is, but it really drives home just how shocking Baji's appearance is to people who aren't used to it. Pure fear.
And the poor Tang monk has to jump in again, trying to calm everyone down. Don't be afraid, don't be afraid. We're not bad people, we're monks on a journey.
He's like the designated reassurance guy, always trying to smooth things over after his disciples terrify everyone.
He has to be. And eventually, it's the old man who kind of talks his family down. He explains, it's just that his disciples' faces are, well, ugly, but they seem kind-hearted even if they look scary.
So he's starting to come around a little.
Yeah, he's trying to square the scary looks with the fact they claim to be on this holy mission. It's interesting that it's the elder who starts to make that connection, isn't it?
That is interesting. Maybe it's that wisdom of age thing, or perhaps just feeling responsible as the head of the house to make some sense of it all. But yeah, it's definitely a little turning point.
Which then leads to the Tang monk. He's basically scolding Monkey King and Pigsy. He thinks they're, you know, their looks.
Their monstrous appearances?
Oh, yeah, and their rough way of talking. He believes they've frightened the people whose house they've just arrived at.
Oh, okay. So he's worried about making a bad impression.
Telling off his disciples.
The reprimand.
Yeah, he says, basically, look, guys, you're both ugly, and you talk rough. You've scared this family half to death. You're making me look bad, creating bad karma for me. He calls it the looks and the coarse language.
And Zubaji's reply is just, peak Baji.
Isn't it just... He boasts, Master, you're kidding. Since I started following you, I've gotten way more handsome. Back in Gao Village, if I just wiggled my ears and stuck out my snout, I'd scare 20 or 30 people dead.
He's actually bragging about how terrifying he used to be. It's hilarious, but it also tells you so much about him, doesn't it? He kind of revels in it.
Totally. It's that mix, that blend of the ridiculous and something kind of insightful that just makes the story work so well. And then Wukong pipes up. He tells Pigsy maybe you should just tidy up his appearance.
Right.
The Tang monk telling off his disciples that appearance is inherent. You're born with it. It's not something you can just change easily. And then Wukong with advice for Baji. He tells Baji, basically, tuck your snout into your robe so people can't see it.
Hide the snout.
And stick your big floppy ears flat against the back of your head. Don't flap them around. Like, that's going to solve everything.
Just a quick cosmetic fix for profound ugliness.
Exactly. And the best part, Baji really did tuck in his snout and stick back his ears, and then he just sort of hunches over beside them.
You can just picture it, can't you? This huge pig man trying to make himself inconspicuous. It's such a visual gag.
It really is.
So they finally get inside the cottage. Humble place.
Simple hospitality, tea, a basic meal.
And they learn a bit more about the old man. His surname's Wang. He has family. He's 61.
Which prompts Monkey's little quip about the reunion of the 60-year cycle, Rai Chae.
Right. But then they circle back to the crucial question.
The big one. Why did you tell us to go back east? Why are Western scriptures so hard to get?
And the old man explains. It's the road itself. It's perilous.
Specifically, he names the 800 Li Yellow Wind Ridge.
800 Li. That's a long way. And filled with monsters, apparently.
Lots of monsters. He even kind of nods to Monkey's boasting, saying, okay, maybe you can do all that stuff.
But this place is really dangerous. Implying even Monkey might struggle.
But Monkey, nah, brushes it right off. Total confidence. No problem.
Typical Monkey. Then comes the meal.
And Pigsy time.
His legendary appetite is on full display.
Absolutely. He just inhales food while Tang Monk and Monkey barely touch theirs. It's funny, but also, you know, gluttonous.
Monkey jokes. He must have met a hungry ghost.
Classic Monkey. And Pigasi is actually quite rude to the old man when offered more.
Yeah, zero manners there. Just grabs it.
Shows his lack of decorum, for sure. Anyway, they sleep. Simple arrangements.
Next morning, they get ready to leave. The old man wishes them well.
Even offers them refuge on the way back if they need it.
Which is nice, but Monkey makes a point of saying, we won't be coming back this way.
A firm statement. Almost like foreshadowing, isn't it?
Definitely feels like it. No retreat. And that leads them. Where else?
Straight to Yellow Wind Ridge. No sooner have they left the cottage. Bam. Huge, dangerous mountain right in front of them.
And the descriptions are incredible. So vivid.
Really paints a picture. Towering peaks, sheer cliffs, deep ravines.
Echoing springs, weird flowers, strange rocks.
Dragon caves, mist, clouds swirling around.
And all kinds of creatures. Deer, snakes, monkeys, tiger.
Even mentions dragons again. Plus these unsettling sounds. It just screams danger ahead.
Masterful buildup of suspense. You feel the atmosphere change completely.
And then, just as they're taking all this in, the wind hits.
Not just any wind, a massive sudden whirlwind.
Tang Monk is understandably terrified.
Wouldn't you be? But Monkey, at first, he's like, ah, it's just wind, seasonal stuff.
Trying to downplay it, but Tang Monk insists, no, this is different. This feels wrong.
Malevolent, yeah. And his description of what the wind is doing is intense.
It really is. He paints this picture of absolute chaos. Trees shaking like mad, willows ripped up.
Flowers scattered. Boats flipping over, travelers lost.
Woodcutters can barely stand, animals are running wild, big trees are falling down.
Rust everywhere, even the sea is churning. It's like nature itself is attacking them.
A total elemental assault, like you said. This is clearly way beyond a normal gust of wind.
Yeah, this is supernatural danger knocking at the door. And it leaves us right there, doesn't it? On the edge of our seats.
It certainly does. And Pigsy, well, his first thought is shelter. Now.
Yeah, he gets quite descriptive, actually. Says it feels like arrows hitting them. He wants to find cover and fast. Practical Pigsy.
But Monkey's reaction is totally different, isn't it?
Oh, completely. Pigsy sees the wind, feels the physical threat. Monkey, though, he's got those, you know, supernatural senses tingling. He thinks, hang on, this isn't normal.
Uh-huh. He even, like, tries to grab the wind, right?
Yeah.
To sort of figure out what kind of wind it is.
He does, which Pigsy finds pretty funny, actually. Like, what are you doing trying to catch the wind? But Monkey suspects it's demonic.
And surprise, surprise, Monkey's hunch is right on the money.
Mm-hmm.
Because just then, things escalate fast. A tiger.
Yep. A huge tiger comes bounding down the hill.
Straight for the Tang Monk.
The classic danger symbol, right? The attacking beast.
Yeah.
But this isn't your average tiger encounter. Not at all.
No way. So Pigsy, got to give him credit. He drops the luggage, grabs his big rake thing.
His nine-toothed rake. Yeah. A formidable weapon.
And he just charges. Straight at the tiger. Ready for a fight.
He's all in. Seems like a straightforward battle for a second. Pigsy versus tiger.
But then, okay, this is where it gets really weird. The tiger, it rears up. And it starts clawing at its own chest. And then it just peels off its skin, like taking off a coat.
Whoa, okay.
Seriously. And underneath, it's this, like, bloody, raw-looking figure.
So definitely not just a tiger.
Not even close. It's a vanguard, some kind of scout. For this character called the Yellow Wind King, and its job to capture humans.
For a feast? Yeah, it's pretty blunt about it, isn't it? Needs them as a side dish or something.
Ugh, it's so creepy. Just the casualness of it, like ordering takeout.
It really hammers home the kind of dangers they're up against. Not just physical obstacles, but, well, malevolent beings with their own awful plans, hearing about them.
Which, of course, just gets Pigsy riled up. He's like, you don't know who we are.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
Classic Pigsy bravado mixed with, you know, genuine outrage. He defends their mission.
He basically tells the creature, get lost or taste my rake.
And they do clash, don't they? A short, kind of brutal fight.
Yeah. Pigsy holds his own. He's strong, you know, when he gets going. The tiger thing has these copper swords.
But Pigsy's rake is powerful. Still, the tiger vanguard is, well, tricky.
It pulls back. Retreats. But it's not really beaten, is it?
No, it seems more like a strategic move. And Monkey sees right through it.
Yeah, Monkey's thinking, something's fishy here. He decides he better go help Pigsy.
Which shows, you know, despite all their bickering, there's loyalty there.
Follow the trail, and what do they find?
The empty tiger skin. Just draped over a rock.
The old switcheroo. It's that famous tactic, huh?
The golden cicada sheds its shell. Jin Chan Tukao. Leaving behind a decoy to escape, it shows their enemy is clever, uses deception.
Super clever. But while they're distracted by this discarded skin, Disaster strikes.
This is the moment. While their attention is diverted,
the monster himself just swoops in and grabs the Tang monk. Gone.
Ah, devastating. They fell for the decoy, and the main objective, protecting the master, failed. It really ups the stakes.
And the description of the Tang monk. Oh, it's heartbreaking. Just crying out for Monkey and Pigsy. You really feel his terror.
Mm-hmm. He's the vulnerable core of the mission, despite his protectors. It's why they're there.
So Monkey and Pigsy, they realize what happened. They've been played. And they are, understandably, freaking out.
Utter panic, guilt, worry. They have to find him. The whole pilgrimage depends on it.
So they start searching frantically.
Yeah.
And their search leads them up onto this place, Yellow Wind Ridge.
Huangfengling.
And there they find it.
Yeah.
The Yellow Wind Cave. Huangfengdong. And the way it's described.
Yeah.
Sounds nasty.
Oh, yeah. Jagged peaks, winding, ancient paths. It feels remote, dangerous. Like the demon's power extends to the landscape itself, you know.
You know, those
layered, sharp peaks. It paints a picture.
Definitely not welcoming.
Yeah.
So Monkey, he takes charge, makes a plan.
Right. Pigsy's job. Stay back, guard the horse and the luggage. Important stuff.
While Monkey, the great sage equaling heaven, goes to knock on the demon's door, metaphorically speaking.
It makes sense. Pigsy's strong, good for defense. Monkey's got the magic, the speed, the smarts for a direct confrontation.
So Monkey strides up to the cave entrance and basically yells, "Hey, give me back my master or else."
Ha ha, yeah. No subtlety, just pure challenge. Declaring who he is, demanding the monk back.
And inside the cave, you can imagine, the little demons are terrified. They scramble to tell the boss.
The Yellow Wind King, who was apparently just chilling. He's surprised by all the commotion.
But here's a funny thing. He's actually annoyed at the Tiger Vanguard.
Oh, why?
Not for messing up exactly, but for grabbing the Tang Monk specifically. And for picking a fight with Monkey.
Ah, so the king knew this would be trouble. He's smarter than his Vanguard, maybe. He didn't actually want to tangle with Sun Wukong if he could help it.
Seems like it. But the Tiger Vanguard, still full of himself, he boasts, "Ah, don't worry, boss, I can handle this monkey guy. Easy."
Famous last words, right? He clearly didn't learn from the first encounter. Overconfidence is not his friend.
Not at all. So round two, Monkey versus the Tiger Vanguard, plus like 50 little minions this time.
The odds look better for the tiger on paper, maybe, but it's Mulky.
Exactly. The fight description really contrasts them. Monkey's golden banded staff, his magic, against the tiger's, well, just copper swords and numbers. It even hints at wind powers, maybe foreshadowing the king's abilities.
Right. It's clear who has the upper hand in terms of raw power and skill.
Predictably, Monkey just wipes the floor with them. The Tiger Vanguard and his crew are routed, defeated.
And in their panic, where do they run?
Straight towards Pigsy. Big mistake. Huge.
Oh, dear. Out of the frying pan.
Into the fire. Pigsy hears them coming, sees the monster that tricked them, and he is not happy. He lets loose with that rake.
And the description is vivid.
Super graphic. 9 bloody holes right through the tiger. Brains everywhere. It's definitive.
It's brutal, but it shows Pigsy isn't just comic relief. He can be incredibly dangerous when protecting the mission or his master. A decisive end to that particular threat.
Monkey sees this, nods approvingly, basically. Like, good job. But then he's immediately back to business. The wind. The kidnapping.
His focus snaps right back. Okay, Vanguard dealt with, but where is the master? Who exactly took him? Was it this wind the tiger controlled?
And they get confirmation. Yes, the Tiger Vanguard snatched the monk to eat him.
So now they know for sure. The monk is in that cave, and the Yellow Wind King is the one they need to face.
The real boss.
All right.
So Monkey's next move, pure Monkey.
Why see you?
He kicks up the dead, mangled body of the Tiger Vanguard.
Oh, okay.
And carries it right to the cave entrance, like delivering a very gruesome package.
A message, a very clear, very aggressive message to the Yellow Wind King. I'm here. I dealt with your scout. Now give me back my master.
Exactly. Talk about provocation. He's ready to force the issue.
It definitely sets the stage for a major confrontation.
But taking on this Yellow Wind King in his own territory, the Yellow Wind Cave, how's that going to play out?
That's the big question, isn't it? This demon seems powerful, maybe controls the wind itself, and potentially smarter than the average monster they face. Monkey's going to need everything he's got.
We'll have to leave you pondering that cliffhanger for now.